If you've been wondering what are the best mid-century flooring choices for your mid-mod remodel, you're in luck. I'm going to start by telling you that the possibilities are many. There are a lot of best mid-century flooring choices you might consider, and a lot of different reasons why one is more the best choice for you and your home than others. And we'll talk about most of them today. But before we get into that, and so you don't miss this point, here's the TLDR of flooring in mid-century homes. You don't need luxury vinyl plank. LVP, or LVT, as it is also called, luxury vinyl tile. It's not particularly luxurious, and it's not tile, although I guess I can't argue that it's not plank. It's certainly vinyl, which means it's not great for you, your home, or the environment. Nor is it nearly as durable as it is marketed to be. More on that in a minute. But without further ado, let's get into the history and future of flooring in mid-century homes, and what are the best mid-century flooring choices for your home. Hey there, welcome back to Mid-Mod Remodel. This is the show about updating MCM homes, helping you match a mid-century home to your modern life. I'm your host, Della Hansman, architect and mid-century ranch enthusiast. You're listening to episode 1702. Quick heads up that today, and really this whole week, are the perfect opportunity to join us inside the Ready to Remodel program, if you've been thinking about it. Come on in, the water's fine. Particularly because a week from Saturday, April 27th to be specific, I'll be hosting one of my Layout Buster Challenge workshops, only for members of the Ready to Remodel program. Now, we do these workshops intermittently, a couple of times a year, with a Mid-Mod Remod Squad often, and I have one scheduled for this group. But you can join us, even if you haven't been part of this Mid-Mod Remod Squad, if you join Ready to Remodel before Saturday. At these Layout Buster Challenge workshops, you get the benefit of the design thinking I do for my one-to-one master plan clients, and something that they don't. They don't get to watch me workshop their problem in real time. Ready to Remodel students bring their floor plans of the area that's been bugging them the most, along with any other ancillary evidence they've got. Photos, sketches, example projects they wish their house was more like, and we work the problem together. I put the floor plan on my tablet, switch on the screen share, and we talk about the pros and cons of various layouts, opportunities, down to the last crucial inch, and from the perspective of big flow throughout the house. At past layout challenges, we have solved snug kitchens, opened up better sight lines from favorite rooms to best views, placed skylights, carved out mudroom space from kitchens and garages, worked through several iterations of the perfect finished basement layout, and more. It's surprisingly helpful to watch other people's challenges workshopped, and intensely satisfying to see your own challenges blown out of the water. Now, I'm not going to say satisfaction guaranteed, but we haven't had a bad result in 4 years of doing these. I know there will be more Layout Buster Challenge workshops in the future, but I myself have no idea when the next one is going to hit the calendar. So if you've been struggling with how to solve some small space or reimagine the whole floor plan layout of some part of your house, well, maybe now is the right time to give Ready to Remodel a try. Get all the other benefits of the program and let me workshop your floor plan for you a week from Saturday. Find out everything you need to know at midmod-midwest.com/ready. Now, of course, I always have a free and easy to get started with resource for you, and this week's best match for today's advice is definitely going to be my Mid-Century Ranch resource list. Among many other resources on the list of product suppliers, mid-century homeowners doing their houses right and documenting the process for your viewing delectation, reading lists of history, theory, even handy how-to advice, you will find my list of favorite mid-century tile suppliers. And tile is definitely one of the flooring types I'm going to talk about today. If you don't already own that, you want to grab it at midmod-midwest.com/resources. Now it's time for a history snippet. Today, let's talk about finding hardwood floors underneath your wall-to-wall carpet. Now, this is the new featured item of this season, the mid-century history snippet. And like last week, I'm going to be able to pair this week's snippet with today's topic, although no promises we'll keep doing that in the future. But I want to talk about this fun find. You might find real original hardwood floors underneath wall-to-wall carpet in a mid-century home, particularly if you happen to be the owner of a mid-century home built before 1954 that has a basement or a crawl space below the main floor and wall-to-wall carpet. You might be in for a surprise. The odds in that case are pretty great that there is original 3/4 inch thick tongue and groove hardwood oak hiding underneath your carpet. And that flooring today is considered absolutely high end, but back in the day, it was absolutely builder grade standard. It was the default flooring for all parts of a mid-century house, anything that was over a basement or a crawl space other than a kitchen or a bathroom, which probably had sheet linoleum or sheet vinyl or sometimes tile. Wall-to-wall carpet did exist before this era, but it was all natural fiber and it was considered to be extremely expensive, hard to take care of, high-end. But in 1954, the manufacturing industries that had been looking for ways to repurpose the kind of industrial supplies they had been turning out for World War II and the war machine and repurpose those into the American consumer economy realized that they could make nylon into a major consumer product. That's when they started to produce and started to heavily advertise wall-to-wall nylon carpeting. Today, wall-to-wall is considered kind of a cheap choice, or occasionally it's someone's preference. They like carpet underfoot, possibly because they grew up with that, and they don't care how hard it is to keep it dust-free. They just want to feel it between their toes. If this is you, no judgment. But it's not considered a standard high-end choice. It's considered, frankly, the sort of builder-grade economy of you just put down OSB subfloor and run some cheap, simple carpet over it and you're done. And it's a problem for the next homeowner to solve. But wall-to-wall carpet was considered the height of modern practicality and luxury when it was paired with your brand new household vacuum cleaner. Out with the broom and the floor polish and in with your Electrolux. After a few years of this universal popularity in new home builds with wall-to-wall carpet, builders started to realize that they didn't need to install hardwood floors underneath the carpet at all. And this also paired with them getting better and better at producing strong engineered oriented strand board, OSB, which is usually used as a subfloor these days. There's no OSB in my 1952 mid-century ranch. The floor itself is 3/4 inch of 2 1/4 inch strip oak, and underneath it are diagonal subfloor boards that rest on top of the joists. And people often take me on a tour of their house as we're doing the field measure visit and show me the diagonal boards above their joists and wonder if that's an older form of flooring. No, that's the subfloor from a time before they had perfected these sort of mass manufactured 4-foot by 8-foot panels, both drywall and OSB. And some kinds of plywood just didn't exist before the World War II era. Or at least not generally speaking. So anyway, if your house was built any later than 1954, your odds of finding hardwood under the carpet go down gradually and then to nothing. But it's always worth a peek. So find a corner where a loose, pulled up bit of carpet won't be apparent and obnoxious and pry up the carpet from the tack strip. See what's underneath there. Remember, if you do find hardwood down there and it looks kind of beat up, even if it has taken a real beating over the boards with spills and grit, that 2 1/4 inch wide tongue and groove is also 3/4 inch thick. It is eminently refinishable and it will be gloriously gorgeous when you do, so definitely reveal it. And if you just love the feeling of carpet underfoot more than wood, then go ahead and put back some great area rugs. You can have your cake and eat it too, with a flooring material that helps you define smaller spaces within rooms, can be picked up and deep cleaned with relative ease through the years, and you can change if you change your mind about it without having to do a whole house flooring transition. So this has been your history snippet, and go check underneath your carpeting, early mid-century homeowners, and you, like me, might find that you got lucky in the lottery of vintage features. All right, before we dive into it, remember you can always find our show notes with links to the references I'm making, photos, and an outline of this conversation on my website at midmod-midwest.com/1702. This season's episodes are all going to be based on listener questions. And our question this week comes from Ben, who lives in a 1967 ranch duplex that needs some updates. It's got 1,100 square feet with great south windows. Fantastic. I love this for you, Ben. But here's his problem. And I quote, "I have choice overload on my floors, which are currently old linoleum and cheap LVP over original tile. I'm hoping there is a good LVP type strategy that keeps a classic look, but I can't make a call on exactly what this is." Okay, a couple of things here. First, I get questions like this all the time, so I'm really happy to dig into flooring details today. Let's talk about the best mid-century flooring options out there, and I will hit on a couple of variations, because again, best mid-century flooring has some variability. For example, I was asked a really great question that's related to this one about the order of operations. When is the right time to redo flooring in relationship to other projects that might change your layout, for example? And we'll talk about that later in the episode. But two, if you, like Ben, feel like you're really getting choice overload when you try to look for the best mid-century flooring and you're like, there is everything. What could I possibly know? My answer is don't panic, because I'll give you some clear pros and cons among the flooring types and remind you to filter those options through the lens of a quick and easy master plan process. Just, you can do it in your head in 5 minutes. I don't mean you have to spend months crafting a whole house master plan, but you can rule out most of them in most situations based on your preferences, your situation, your budget, your timeline, and what you like. And the third point, which perhaps I should have said first, I'm so glad, Ben, that you've asked it about an alternative to LVP. LVP, remember, is luxury vinyl plank, often also called luxury vinyl tile, even when it doesn't look like tile. And excuse me while I do a quick rant about why luxury vinyl plank sucks. You can't stop me. I'm going to. No offense to you, Ben, for asking about an LVP-like strategy, though. I get you. You're looking for something that is easy to install, attractive, durable, popular, pleasant, all of the things that LVP is described and sold as being. But you're also absolutely right to feel like something is off about that product, because it is not all it is cracked up to be. As a designer, I have a number of bones to pick with this material. First, I hate it aesthetically. It looks fake and cheap. Always. It is typically produced by printing a picture of a real material onto a surface and then laminating over it. No. And the shape of LVP is nearly always the same. The planks, and you can hear my air quotes on plank, are 5 to 8 inches wide and about 3 to 4 inches long. Much different from a classic, for example, as we were just talking about, the oak floor you would find in an original mid-century ranch from the early 50s. That's always going to have longer and narrower boards. So that wider and shorter board is, it's not really the same as any other mid-century floor material. It's always going to seem specifically weird to anyone who's paying attention. And then even to someone who's not really looking closely, it's going to feel a little uncanny, a little off. Plus, let's leave aesthetics aside for a minute and talk about how it's bad for you and it's bad for the environment. There is an area in Louisiana where a lot of vinyl is produced known as Cancer Alley. It is home to many of the chemical manufacturing plants that produce vinyl, and 91% of the residents in that area report health problems linked to chemical exposure. People who work around it and people who just live near the places where it is produced. That's terrifying. People who work in hospitals, yes, hospitals, with vinyl flooring, that's all of them these days, that's harshly cleaned with the chemicals specifically for vinyl flooring, are reporting shockingly high rates of occupational asthma. I think of vinyl as basically the asbestos of our modern era. Now, similarly to the mid-century moderns, we pay attention to the good things about this product and ignore the health risks for the sake of convenience and because of capitalistic advertising. Unlike asbestos, a lot of the worst things that vinyl does to our bodies are in the early off-gassing phase, which can last a long time, but starts most and then slowly tapers, whereas asbestos will be dangerous to you anytime it's disturbed. But honestly, that makes it a real lose-lose trade-off for you, the owner of a mid-century home, because you might have the owner's original asbestos to deal with as a potential health hazard, and you're being advised by people now to install polyvinyl chloride in your house to slowly release dioxins and phthalates at you right now. The worst of both worlds. Plastics are especially likely to off-gas when they're exposed to sunlight. So this is something, you know, are you going to keep the sun off of all of your floors forever? When we're looking for the best mid-century flooring materials, this is not it. Okay, so it looks cheap and it hurts you, but at least it's durable, right? Not so much. The surface of LVP is waterproof and durable, but just like wrapping your house in vinyl siding, this is creating a layer that is difficult for water to move through, that can prevent water from getting into it, yes, but water moves through systems. In your house, sometimes there will be a big spill. It will get in through the cracks in the space. It will get in around the edge. Humidity will gather. Water that leaks through those gaps will soak into the underlayers of the engineered material, usually cork, and get into the subfloor, OSB, and not be able to evaporate back out. So humidity can build up underneath it, spills can build up underneath it, and it's just sealing in potential problems that won't be obvious until they are big problems. You can rot out your entire subfloor before you even realize that something is going wrong if you have a slow leak that's getting underneath a sealed surface like LVP. Plus, the finish that's supposedly so durable is just skin deep. It's a picture. So if you gouge or scratch it, there's nothing to refinish or repair. You'll need replacement boards of the same finish that are ideally worn and faded the same amount, and you'll have to disassemble the whole floor to get one back into the place in the matrix where it will fit. Is there anything I can say about LVP that's good? Well, I guess it's pretty easy to install, but so are a lot of other engineered floors like Kliklok, wood, or cork, and they have far fewer health and aesthetic issues. So, deep breath. I don't want to rant for too long about this because we're talking about positives, not negatives today, but hopefully I've persuaded you to say no thanks and walk away from anyone who wants to tell you that LVP is the best mid-century flooring material. It is not. It shouldn't really be the best choice for any part of a mid-century home update. Now, let's talk about what is a good material. Different types of flooring materials you might use in a mid-century remodel. First, and probably most vintagely appropriate, especially in a Midwestern house, is wood. And we've got hardwood and engineered wood, the baseline builder grade material that is actually also really beautiful and gorgeous and lovely in its original form. Like so many of the mid-century materials is oak hardwood floor, the 2¼-inch strip, you can still get it today, although it is by no means as available, is going to be the most vintage appropriate floor for any part of a house that's in a social bedroom hallway space that isn't on a slab. You can install hardwood over a slab, but in that case, I would go with a different type of material, again, because of moisture and thermal and temperature control issues. But there's also the option of an engineered floor. Now, this is practical, easy to install, much better than LVP. It's not my favorite because it has that same proportion issue where the boards are always going to be wider and shorter than original wood, but it's a much better choice aesthetically and durationally. It can't be refinished as often as solid hardwood, but it can be refinished usually once or sometimes twice if you're careful. So it has some benefits that way. And again, it's a real thin material. It's a real material, however thin. So if you ding it or scratch it or spill something on it that stains, you can deal with that part of it without having to replace the whole material. It has some depth to it, literally. So it's not as thick as it actually installs, though. It's got a wood layer on top, and then underneath, probably some sort of cork to give it a little bit of give and protect it from crushing, and then probably some sort of hardboard material below that, or sometimes it goes in a different order. It's an engineered material. If you're going to be putting cork into some part of your floor, though, I would say, why not just go with a cork floor? I love cork as a foot-friendly material. A lot of people with pets and kids are afraid of cork because they're afraid it's going to just be too vulnerable to wear and tear. But there are mid-century installed cork floors that are still going strong. I think if you have pets and dogs with long nails, I wouldn't recommend it. I wouldn't guarantee that it will work for you. Of course, some amount level of hardware is going to happen. But I put cork in several spaces of my own house, and I have a Dobie Mix mutt who has long nails because she doesn't like to have them trimmed, and she runs around the house and in and out all day and has never managed to damage my floors. So far, so good. So I also think they can be really comfortable, and I enjoy them. They're more affordable than actual hardwood floors. And if you're going to choose between an engineered wood floor and an engineered cork floor, I would always choose the engineered cork because it's closer to the original mid-century version of itself than wood is. So if you take an engineered wood floor and compare it side by side to an original mid-century wood floor, it's going to look quite different. But an engineered click-lock cork floor doesn't look that aesthetically different from the mid-century version, which would have been a roll-out solid surface cork. And also because if you happen to have any original mid-century hardwood left in your house, sometimes it's too problematic to try to match a new material to that. Even if you're going to a new supplier to get the same kind of 2¼-inch strip, it might be hard to get the grain density, the stain color, just the exact tonal match, right? So you can say, I'm going to make a distinction. We're going to keep the authentic original mid-century hardwood and then do something next to it that coordinates but does not try to match it. All of these engineered options are also very DIYable. You can self-install them. If you want to self-install a hardwood floor, more power to you, but that is not a beginner-level DIY project, certainly. Before I skip off of the engineered floors, bamboo is an option. You'll see sold the same way. It comes in the same kind of planks, same kind of click-lock install. It's not my favorite for mid-century homes. I don't think it's the best mid-century flooring option, just partly from a color perspective, also from its pattern, its grain. Maybe if you were going for a sort of a Scandi modern version of mid-century, it might feel like the right choice. But in general, I would just steer clear of that. I would always choose a wood or a cork over that. One more word on engineered floors is that I would also choose always a natural finish, a warm brown tone, rather than any of the colored options for those. I would not recommend I would not recommend the choice I made for myself within 6 months of moving into my house of a gray cork floor. I love the color gray, and I will probably love the color gray to my grave, but it is a trendy color, and therefore it will already read to me and to other people as slightly on the nose and about to go out of fashion. And it's a choice that I wouldn't have made if I had stopped and taken the time to do a master plan process. So there's me telling on myself for your benefit. What I told my sister to do when she several years later tackled putting cork floor into her basement over a nice subfloor, which is, by the way, for people finishing a basement, a light elevated subfloor with a click lock engineered cork floor is one of my favorite DIYable and yet wonderfully durable, cost-effective, looks nice finish options for a basement floor. Gives you a little bit of foot friendliness, a little bit of that's that squish that's easy on your knees, a little bit of insulation, not a whole lot, but without losing too much headroom by raising up the floor height. It's a great compromise, but I told her to go with cork colored cork, not gray, and she and I both agree it's the best decision. Wish I'd made that choice for myself. All right. So much for the wood and cork type of things. What do you do if you're putting flooring over a slab? Well, depending on what's underneath, you might think about something pretty hefty. If you are really going onto a concrete floor, you could think about a terrazzo, or even just polishing the concrete, especially in high-use places like laundry rooms, kitchens, entry halls. I love terrazzo for mid-century houses. If you live in California or in Florida where you're building right on a slab, this can be an excellent choice for you. If you're working in a basement, particularly a walkout basement that has a high finish quality, having a new terrazzo floor installed, choosing the beautiful embedded rocks you want to put into it, finding the matrix color and having it all polished, it is stunning. But of course, that takes a more sturdy floor support system than most mid-century upper floor houses have, even with their very nice, durable, old growth joists. So what can you do if you want a terrazzo look, but you're in a kitchen over a basement? Well, you could think about terrazzo style tile. Some of these are more an aesthetic copy, and some of them are, you know, terrazzo made large and cut into tile formats. You can set them with interesting contrasting borders or very close together with little metal borders, which I love as a really snappy, snazzy look that pulls back a metal choice that you want to make elsewhere in the house. Terrazzo and all the tile choices you might make for a kitchen or a bedroom or other hard-wearing space aren't as foot-friendly, as comfortable to stand on, but they are excellent for high traffic areas. They're very cleanable. They're basically indestructible. They do not take or show grease stains. They do not embed anything that's spilled or any kind of child or pet effluent that might happen. So if you know that you want that impermeability, but you don't like standing on cold terrazzo, you could just throw it on compression mats at the sink and the stove or area rugs away from the kitchen, wherever you'd like them. This is a beautiful, great, best mid-century flooring choice for certain circumstances that is extremely durable. And again, as we're thinking about what is your long-term choice, you absolutely want to think about how to put tile into your home in some place. If it pleases you, it's a wonderful place to really express yourself. So we can go from terrazzo to any other tile type. Particularly if you're working with an odd shaped space, you might not want to do a large format tile because there'll be some place where this dimension of the tile runs up against an edge and has to be cut. That can be concealed with a smaller format tile. And this is often why mid-century bathrooms have that very small 1x1, 1x2, 2x2 patterns sometimes, or just an array of 1x1 squares or even smaller ones, because it is very friendly to the sort of odd small shapes and you don't have to do as much cutting. You can just place around the corners. I can't possibly get into all the various types of tile that are out there, but do think about when you're thinking about tile for a flooring, how slick and slippery it might be, particularly in places like bathrooms or kitchens where it might occasionally be wet. You want to make sure that it is recommended as a flooring material, and you might even want to get samples and test it. Of course, you want to get samples of everything and test it all, don't you? Because you're a good mid-mod remodeler? Okay, I knew you were. One more thing about hard surfaces. If you have concrete that you're thinking about, how do I cover this concrete with a proper mid-century surface? Well, concrete also falls on the list of best mid-century flooring types. You can have it polished or painted or you can't stain it after the fact. Well, you can acid etch it. If you're doing new concrete flooring, You can have color embedded right into it. It is durable. It is permanent. You can get it with in-floor heat, again, if you're building new. Frank Lloyd Wright loved a red painted or stained concrete floor as a finished floor. It was inexpensive and classy, and you could put carpets over it all day long. Vintage laminate flooring. Well, it's perfectly authentic to do a roll-down laminate. Might be vinyl or might have been linoleum back in the mid-century day. These are not most people's favorite options, but if you're looking for a particular type of more historically accurate, sort of more vintage style, less mod, mid-century modern, mid-century vintage, perhaps mid-century traditional, you can absolutely consider the vintage laminate option. Now, the product that was originally sold as linoleum, these days you're going to find it more often sold as marmoleum. And I personally love to source my marmoleum from Green Building Supply, which is a family-run business in Iowa. They're really fun and nice, and they send you samples, and they're great communicators. But you can do all sorts of fun colors and patterns with this. You can do a rollout. You can do an engineered click-lock version. I wouldn't do it in planks, though. I would do it in squares. And if you're going to do that, you can play around with a checkerboard pattern. One note about high contrast checkerboard patterns. First off, that reads a little more 40s than it does 50s, 60s, or 70s. And second, for people who are trying to keep a floor clean, you might want to think about flooring color as part of your personal feelings about what looks clean. If you don't believe it's clean unless it's white and it looks white, then go for a light colored floor. But those might show more drip straps and dirt over time, so you might want a darker tone color. But if you go with a high contrast, for example, a dark to light checkerboard, you might find that you've got sort of tracked in footprints on the dark and little drips and drops of things on the light, and it's just impossible for it ever to feel clean. Of course, everybody's tendency to clean is their own, but just bear in mind when you're considering the pros and cons of various flooring, the best mid-century flooring isn't going to work for you unless it is also going to meet your standards of how it looks when it's as clean as you feel like making it. But marmoleum is a favorite of mine. One fun thing to do too is to have a low contrast option where most of the floor is a field color and a few odd shaped places, not in any kind of pattern at all, are a contrasting color, just to highlight the 8x8 or the 12x12 square nature of the material. Show it off. And then there's carpet. Now, I am not a huge fan of wall-to-wall carpet. I grew up in a house that had wall-to-wall carpet, and I felt like no matter how much it was my job as a teenager to vacuum it, we never really got all the schmutz out of it. When I removed the wall-to-wall carpet from this house, I found the literal dust of ages underneath it. To me, it just feels like it's never really going to be clean. But it's comfortable. It's warm. Some people really like to have it underfoot. And if that's you, go for it. If you are really in love with carpet, I would highly recommend that instead you think about area rugs. They're easier to pick up, move around, size specifically for the room, use as a grouping to tie an area of furniture pieces together, make a smaller space feel actually larger if you size them perfectly, and they're just much easier to clean. Plus, you can change your mind about them much more easily over time. So, one more thing that comes up regularly when people ask me about flooring options is the order of operations for changing the flooring. Do you need to lock in your layout before you can make any changes effectively to your flooring material? Now, this comes up a lot because many of my Ready to Remodel students, many of the people listening to this podcast, maybe you, and many even of my master plan clients are planning to do their work in phases. And some of the changes need to be made right now. Something is just too worn out to live with. This flooring is making you unhappy. But you also know you're going to be adding on a space. What does it mean to put new floor in a kitchen when you're going to be adding a mudroom later and you want the flooring to go through consistently? What does it mean to put in flooring in a kitchen when you're going to change the layout of cabinets and counters around it later? What does it mean to remove walls or add them after you have made a flooring change? So in an ideal world, we would do everything in the right order, and that would be to change the layout of the space, and then put in new flooring. We don't generally build walls on top of floors, although, quick caveat on that. And, you know, the flooring is almost one of the last things that happens in a well-ordered remodel. Everything else can be done, heavy things can be moved around, and we don't risk any damage to the flooring. We come around and do that last. However, sometimes that's just not the way your life works. And although typically flooring doesn't run under the walls, in certain mid-century homes, again, with that original hard plank hardwood. They were built in such a way that the wood floors ran completely across an open floor plan and the walls were built on top of it. I'm always delighted when we find this in a remodel where we need to sort of rearrange the bedroom allocation of space, because that means we can pick up and move closet walls, basically. And we don't need to worry about patching in around all the spaces. If the hardwood runs consistently right underneath all those fussy little walls, we can take them out, we can refinish the floor, and we can rearrange the space between the bedrooms. That's rare, and it's probably not what's going on in the case we're thinking about. Ideally, though, if you want to change the layout, you don't necessarily need to build the new walls you're going to. You can think about certain types of material for flooring that can have walls put over them, but you do want to remove any walls that are going to come out before you put in new, finish, high-end flooring you're going to love. Even if you don't do the rest of the stuff, even if you leave the rest of it a little bit unfinished, get the flooring to run consistently everywhere it will eventually be. You can also think about more like temporary solutions. You can easily connect from an existing space into an addition if you have planned ahead and you've gotten all of the material you're going to need. This is where you want big overages. While normally I always recommend for a 10% overage in a flooring material, if you're planning to transition from one space into another and do the other part later, get 20% overage of the entire square footage just to be safe. You might also think about what are temporary short-term choices. If you can just eke out living along with the flooring you've got a little bit longer. And if you think about the timelines of the time you need to live with a temporary space, you might do something like paint over whatever the existing flooring material is because you're planning to change it in 5 years. And it can probably take that wear and tear and feel fresher and cleaner and more you now in the immediate meantime. And then you can go back and do more to it later. One slightly kooky example from my own family of enthusiastic DIYers is that my little sister and her husband went through several layers of DIY improving their back of house addition that had been put on in the 1970s. They took up the previous floor and got an engineered floor that they wanted to put down over it. So they cut all the pieces to length, put it into the space, and lived with it for a while. Even though they knew they weren't done with the work and they actually wanted to take the flooring up and do a little bit of plumbing underneath to install laundry in that area later. But they got it all installed and lived with it for that year so that they didn't have to live with an unfinished floor during that whole time. And then because it was an engineered floor, they simply unclicked all the click locks and stacked them in an organized manner so that they were set up, they were still all cut to length, and then did the plumbing they needed to do and put the floor back down. Then they trimmed around all of it so it was actually locked into place when they were done. This is the kind of thing you can do with a floating floor. It's not designed to ever really be secured down. It's not glued into place. It's not nailed into place. So technically speaking, it was possible. Basically, if you need to think about order of operations, think about your life, how DIY the project is going to be, how much you can stand the materials you have now, and try to take the long view. The more you can see down to what your ultimate plan is, the more you can master plan, the better off you will be. Okay, so let's recap and wrap off. Luxury vinyl plank sucks. Please don't use it. It's bad for you, bad for the environment, bad for the value of your house, and it's not as durable as it is marketed to be anyway. There are many great options that you can think about for a best mid-century flooring. None of them are really the best. They all have their pros and cons, but wood, original hardwood, if you've got it, preserve it, love it, take care of it. If you choose, it's probably the most authentic thing you can put into a new area or to replace is to have someone reinstall the type of original hardwood there would have been in a mid-century house, which is 2 1/4 inch wide oak plank. You can also think about wood engineered floors. I think it's a not ideal option, but it works. And then there's cork, which is by far my preference of the engineered floor options. Bamboo, I don't really recommend for a mid-century house. If you want a harder, more durable surface, terrazzo or polished concrete are basically impermeable, but you can also go with tile and even a terrazzo format tile that will really have the look without the complexity and the weight-bearing nature of tile. And then, of course, I'm a big fan of vintage laminate. Marmoleum floors can be really fun, practical, and cost-effective, and they just have a timeless quality, particularly if you choose the right color. And they can be a place to express some fun with color. Carpet, not my favorite, but you do you. If you really, really love wall-to-wall carpet, you can go ahead and do it and leave your flooring replacement for the next person when you move out of the house and they want something fresh. I'm going to leave you with a pep talk that relates to this question. I have spent a lot of time using the phrase best mid-century flooring, partly because I think it's going to help people find this episode through SEO, but also because it is what people ask about. It's what you are probably looking for. What is the best mid-century flooring for your house? And my answer to you, to my clients, to my students in Ready to Remodel, to everybody who asks me this is, it depends. When I use the phrase, it depends, which comes up, what's the best kitchen flooring? What's the best bathroom layout? What's the best roof line? What's the best type of kitchen stove? Well, it depends. And when I answer this way, I'm not hedging or hesitating. I do have opinions and experience on all of these matters. Oh, and strong personal preferences of my own. You won't find any designer who doesn't have an instinctive knee-jerk preference response to any of these questions. But while people generally say, what's the best mid-century flooring? What they actually mean to ask is, what's the best mid-century flooring for me and for my house? And that's where it really does depend. I need more information before I can answer. The best mid-century flooring depends on your taste, the size of your pets, the age of your kids, if any, your knee health, even your tendency to be a little bit of a Butterfingers. How often are you going to drop plates on the kitchen floor? It's a real question. The short version of my answer is that there are some great options that provide for a really indestructible floor, one that's easy to maintain and will last forever. And if that's what you're looking for, I recommend tile, particularly terrazzo tile that's smooth underfoot, easy to keep clean, and hides a little bit of dirt. No dropped item will dent that floor, and no pet nail will ever ding it up. No amount of spilled water will be a problem. Then there are also options that provide for a little more bounce. In that case, I love to recommend a marmoleum or even a cork floor. Yes, cork is actually great in some kitchens. That kind of floor will give you forgiveness if you drop a mug. It's more comfortable to stand on all afternoon in bare feet. These are both good options, but they aren't the right answer for everyone universally because it depends. So your pep talk for today, the thing I want you to take with you is that there is not a best mid-century flooring universally, but there is a best choice for you, and that's going to depend on what's already going on in your house, what your family style, size, type preferences are, and what you like the look of. Then you're going to workshop from that. It will narrow it down, but you'll still have a couple of options to choose from. You will look at pricing. You will look at sourcing. You will look at environmental friendliness. You'll weigh how it works with the other choices you're making in the house. And eventually you'll come down to one of several options that's going to work best and go with the one that's the most practical, cost-effective, and makes you smile the most. That is taking yourself through the master plan method in mini format. And it works every time to answer these kind of option heavy, everything on the internet exists questions, and is so much more effective than just Googling for best mid-century flooring or best fill in the blank about your house. So I hope I've gotten you a little bit closer to finding the best mid-century flooring options for yourself. If you want to hit any of the references for this episode, if you're looking for the place to join Ready to Remodel quickly before the Layout Challenge Buster Workshop, if you want that free resources list, or if you want to see some pictures of flooring, go check out the show notes page at midmod-midwest.com/1702. Meanwhile, next week on the podcast, I'm going to be bringing in a special guest to help me answer the question of what is the best, yes, the best landscaping you can do for a mid-century house. And I have my own opinions about this, but as a person who has only recently graduated to keeping 5 houseplants alive, I'm not the best person to tell you the answer. So I'm bringing in a friend who will really have some expertise to bring to bear on the topic of mid-century landscaping. See you for that next week. And in the meantime, have some fun narrowing down the options from everything to what's going to work well with your existing house, your lifestyle, and your preferences. Okay, catch you next week.